They were fantastic. to Art's point about his call, I brought my whole family to the NBA Finals in the 2015, the first season, Game 1, and that was one of those things that, as a family, we'll never forget it. You know, Daddy rarely goes into the pocket for anything, let alone NBA Finals tickets, but it was a fun family moment. So we have the picture of the four of us, you know, from the upper deck. We didn't have quite as good a seats as you and Nikki, of course.
That was a regular season game. You're talking about the finals.
Yeah, and I was doing...
I would have been in the lower bowl for the finals.
I believe I was doing middays, still recovering from the firing of 2014 at the time. So, but that's neither here nor there, Joe. We got to get legal.
The game I remember the most about you and your family, didn't you take them to game one against the Spurs? And
yes.
when the Spurs were up, 18 in that game, and then Kawhi got hurt, and everyone was blaming you for
they were down 27.
That's... it was like the first game you went to in the playoffs. There was something where everyone told you on radio, if you go and you screw this up, you're taking the blame.
Definitely.
And they were getting blown out, and I looked at your Twitter feed, and everyone was telling
you to leave
the building.
That's when my wife met Bonte Hill out in the corridor at halftime.
You're listening crazy. To 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. Good morning. We're still efforting the great Jim Barnett. If you're just joining us here in the 8 o'clock hour, here's what's coming up. Steve Mariucci will join us at 8:30, but right now we're reflecting. Tonight, the Warriors are in Cleveland. Tip time, 4 p.m., right here on 95.7 The Game. Warriors find themselves as 11.5-point favorites. This game doesn't carry the luster it used to. And that's predictable because LeBron James is now playing in Los Angeles. But it has given us the opportunity to go back over the last 4 years. 30 games between the Warriors and the Cavaliers. Regular season, 8 games, Warriors go 6-2. NBA Finals, 22 games, Warriors go 15-7 for an overall record against the Cavs of 21-9 the last 4 years. But the Cavs did win the NBA Finals in that second year, the 73-win season. So we're reflecting. We're taking this day to look back on the best moments, the worst moments, the iconic moments, and everything in between of the last 4 seasons. If you want to weigh in, we'd love to hear from you. 888-957-9570. Those just joining us, Dibs and I both sided with Game 4 that first year. Everything that meant Game 4. Down 2-1 in Cleveland, watching this run possibly slip through the fingers of the Warriors. Because at that point, if they lose that series, there's no guarantee they're getting back.
Right.
This was way before Durant. This was way before any of that stuff, before Steph smashed the three-point record again. Steph had an awesome season, but it was still viewed as like that breakout season. He wins an MVP. Nobody knew this was going to maintain. Nobody knew Draymond Green was going to be Defensive Player of the Year, that Klay Thompson was going to become one of the best two-way players in the game. If that got away from them, they may never have gotten back. That may have all been for naught.
Right, and you look at a team that hadn't, or an organization that hadn't won a title in 40 years, and to get that close, and if you were going to be denied, especially after crawling out of that hole against Memphis, where it looked like you figured it out, and Steve Kerr, this wunderkind of a coach, maybe he is a real difference maker, and you're able to put Iguodala in the starting lineup, you take Bogut to the bench, he goes on to be finals MVP, and you win your first title in 40 years. That, to me, the first one's always the most special when it comes to championships because you've never experienced it. It's not to lessen the ones that come after it, but something about that moment, and I'm surprised that we both had that down as our number one.
I remember living and dying with that. This was before the kids were born. Nikki and I hadn't even been here a year.
And you having a 30-1 ticket probably added to a little bit of your interest, quite frankly.
And I got so arrogant towards the end. So arrogant, I was like, I'm not hedging any of this, especially when they boated Houston in 5 in the Western Conference Finals. I was like, it's on. I'm letting this thing ride. I'm not even considering it. I think the only other guy in town that picked the Warriors to win that year, Ethan Sherwood Strauss, he had him that year. He was the only other guy that somehow, some way had documentation of saying before the year started, I got these guys winning the title. For me, it was just some long shot. It was one of these, if fate exists, I'm moving up there to take this job. I'll take a 30-1. Maybe they make a run and I hedge it. I didn't see them winning it. And that actually, truth be told, I was down pretty big to the bookie. And when that cashed, it wiped out like all this debt. And the guy was just furious. He thought he had me. Think again, buddy.
Yeah.
Think again.
You got to get up pretty early to burn Fortinbaugh on a wager of that size and scope.
Gary in Livermore. Gary, welcome to the program. Favorite moments. What's going on?
Good morning, guys. My favorite moment is a little bit before the Cavaliers. Game 7 against the Clippers. When the Clippers won, Doc Rivers celebrated like they won the finals. He must have fist pumped like 50 times. And I remember thinking to myself, I can't wait till next season and get back and kick the Clippers behind. The Clippers didn't beat us until this year. moment, and the next season we beat the Cavs in the playoffs. And that just stuck in my craw forever. Doc Rivers going, yeah, yeah, yeah. He won game the first round, and that started it all for me.
Beautiful. Love the phone call. We're really starting to dig into some nitty-gritty stuff with this. That's the beauty of going to the fans on it. We talked about it a bit earlier, the idea that it was Warriors, Clippers, Warriors, Clippers, Warriors, Clippers, and then all of a sudden a switch flipped and it was just done. That was it. The Warriors, they hit the nitrous button in Fast and the Furious and just left the Clippers all the way back like Ja Rule in that opening scene.
Dusted.
When Monica would have gotten with him if he had won the race, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Paul Walker burned out the car, hit the nitrous button too early.
Kind of the way that was, because the Warriors led by 8 at the half in that game, 126-121. Shout out the legendary Dana Ali. I was at his house in San Leandro, and you could see the third quarter come and go, and the Warriors were hanging around, as you like to say,
oh, yeah.
Teddy KGB.
Alligator blood.
But they just couldn't get over the hump. They didn't yet have the championship blood that Leandro Barbosa would talk about the next year.
Derek in San Jose. Derek, welcome to the program. The floor is yours. Fire away.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Love the show, by the way. My moment is the 2017 NBA Finals, Game 2. It was around the third quarter. The Warriors were starting to take control. And I don't know if you recall, but Curry cooked LeBron with a triple, quadruple crossover, set a huge statement, set the stage for the rest of that game in the series. Also took me back to the year before where LeBron housed him in Game 6. I thought it was a great moment. And I just kind of knew then that this was our year and the revenge tour would be complete. Furthermore, my father passed away the Friday before Game 5 of that series. He was a big Warriors fan and a big basketball fan. So just that entire moment in series of moments was important for me. And I think a great moment overall.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Derek. We appreciate it. There was just, over the course of those 30 games, how many big moments did you get from the biggest players? Like, Kyrie Irving wasn't a part of all four, but Kyrie in those 30 games, the Christmas game
yeah.
winner. I think Klay was right on him at the rack, and he still made the bucket.
Kevin Love with a big
defensive
play and when they won the title in 16.
That's right. LeBron's block, which, you know, you'd mentioned it earlier with Papa and the 3 points of contact, but that is one of the all-time great LeBron James moments. I mean, people forget about that because the next 2 years, the Warriors went on to beat him. You know,
8 out of 9, like Clay was saying, 1 and 8 with Clay's comments.
That block was massive. Iguodala was there. I mean, that was, and James has to go coast to coast to get there. It's not as if he was out on the perimeter and then turned and was sprinting with him. I mean, he had to go coast to coast to make that play. And that's a signature play for him, the chase down block, something he doesn't do in the regular season anymore to preserve energy. But in the playoffs, it still rears its
ugly head. Just a heartbreaking moment, too, because you see Iguodala going up. And you if he can just get that ball up on the glass before LeBron gets to it, it's goaltending. And Pop the next day, of course, talking 3 points of contact because you're not allowed to pin the ball against the backboard. That technically is goaltending, but you're never going to make that call in that situation.
What? How many points did they score in that Game 7 fourth quarter? Did you say 13? That's all they could come away with? They
18,
went
13.
Dry in like the final, what, like 4.5 minutes. They came away with nothing.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get to the line, and that's what everyone was talking about. Like, you got to find someone that can get to the line, and then... Yeah, I found Durant.
I was so angry that day. I was so angry. Could not be near my parents. They were like, are you okay? No.
No one was okay. Because now we got to eat crow. I'm going to probably have to call Cleveland and, you know, apologize and go on the air and get my teeth kicked in again. The infamous billboard incident.
Yeah.
Which will not be mentioned here any further. Here's what we're going to do. If you're on hold, we're going to keep the conversation going. Stay on hold. We want all the greatest moments. As the Warriors get set for the Cavs tonight, what are your favorite memories of the last 4 years? 30 showdowns between Golden State and Cleveland. We'll turn it over to you next. Joe Lo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game.
Don't miss Warriors president and GM Bob Myers as he joins Papa and Bonte live from the Chase Center.
Have you ever worn any of those rings, Bob?
You can't do it, Bob. I can't. You could.
Not even for like a photo. I mean, you got to take one photo where you got all three on and you're like fanning yourself.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Bob Myers with Papa and Bonte. Today at 1 on the home of the NBA champs, 95.7. The Game. Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Steve Mariucci in about 13 minutes at 8:30. Cam Inman will join us at 9:30. Joe Lowendibs here on 95.7 The Game. Phone lines are juiced. Conversation is as follows. Tonight, 4 p.m., right here on 95.7 The Game, you will have the Warriors in Cleveland taking on the Cavaliers for the first of two encounters this season. Warriors currently find themselves as 11.5-point favorites, over-under of 222. However, this game, for the first time in about 5 years, carries very little luster. And that is because LeBron James no longer resides in Cleveland. He's with the Lakers, and the Cavs are a shell of their former selves. Naturally, this happens. However, Anthony Slater, friend of the program, has a great article up on The Athletic looking back over the last 4 years of matchups between the Warriors and the Cavs. 30 total games between the regular season and the finals. The Warriors are 6-2 against Cleveland in the regular season during that stretch, 15-7 against the Cavs in the finals for a grand total of 21-9. However, they did lose that one championship season. The 73-win season belonged to Cleveland. We are taking this opportunity to kind of look back and reflect upon a four-year era that featured just as much Cleveland as it did Golden State. We have had the ability to reside on the Golden State side, to enjoy the Warriors side, to watch and reflect upon it, but Cleveland has played just as big a role in this. LeBron, Kyrie, Kyle Korver, Tristan Thompson, Matthew Dellavedova, all these guys. And in the heat of the moment, you can hate them all you want. That's the beauty of sports. But now that it's over, you can kind of look back fondly. I do look back to the teabagging and the 3 points of contact on the backboard and Kyrie's game winners and Dellavedova just pestering the hell out of an injured Steph Curry. And in the moment, I hated those dudes. But the reality is now you can look back, and at least for me, you can truly appreciate it because that was a remarkable era. We're never going to be able to duplicate it, and we're never going to get it back because that's the end of Cleveland, which goes to show that we should all appreciate what we have while we have it.
It's incredible to think about 30 matchups over the course of 4 years in terms of these two teams won't play 30 times until 15 years have passed. Because you play twice.
Oh, good context.
You play twice a year. So, yeah, you're at Cleveland today, and then I don't even know when the return fixture is back in Oakland, but that's going to be two matchups this year, and so it'll likely be two a year for the next 15 to match 30 games. That's the one that hit me, the fact that they've played 30 times over the course of 4 years. Warriors 21-9, and if you take the finals out that they lost, it's not so much of a rivalry because they would have dominated it at an 18-5 clip. So that one championship for Cleveland not only is huge for the city of Cleveland, but also for the very fabric of the rivalry, because without that, it's kind of a one-sided motorboating, really.
No doubt. Phone lines are open, 888-957-9570. Your favorite moments you reflect upon, everything from the 30-game stretch. We'd love to hear from you. Sean in Concord. Sean, thank you for the phone call. Fire away.
Morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My favorite Cavs Warriors moment, I think, was about 4 years ago. Curry's on the sideline. He heaves up a three. He falls out of bounds, falls into the fans, hits the three. The fan helps him up, gives him a high five, and Curry scuttles back down the court. I can't exactly remember what it happened, but that was my favorite moment. Me and my wife and kids were jumping up and down, thinking we were watching the greatest basketball player of all time.
Love that. Thank you for the phone call. That's fantastic. Newman, San Jose. Newman, welcome to the show. The floor is yours. What's going on?
Hello, boys.
Hello, Newman.
You're especially going to love this one. Game 7 of the 73-game season. And if you guys remember, that game was actually the best one of the series because all the other ones were just blowouts. And we were all having watching the games together. We had like 10 to 12 people. And those last 4 minutes, we're all standing up in the living room, every one of us. And then Iguodala's block by LeBron was just like, oh, my gosh. And it's about that, you get that fit in the moment thinking, oh, man, we may actually lose it. So you guys know the result. My father-in-law, you know, I'm obviously letting some words fly. And right after the game, he looks and he makes a dumb comment. Why do you care? You don't own the team, and I swear I wanted to choke him out. It's one of those things that you can't do that. I'm sure, Dib, you can relate to that.
Without a doubt.
Oh, my God. I mean, these games, I'm trying to think. It happened in the Houston series last year because some of those games were so intense, and it certainly happened the first year, and it definitely had to happen during Game 7. But being unbearable, like the dog, the cat, and my wife – who was my girlfriend for some of this, they didn't want to be in the room because this will happen with it happened with the Super Bowl and the Eagles and all that. I don't sit during that stuff. I move around. I don't even stand still. I'm just consistently moving throughout. That's something that goes all the way back. It doesn't happen for a lot now, but if it's a massive game that I'm invested in, either emotionally or, let's be honest, financially.
Yeah.
Like, you'll see me moving. And during those games, game seven especially, I don't think I sat for the entire second half of that. I mean, it wasn't supposed to get there.
No.
You came back from 3-1 down against OKC. It was done, coach. We had put a bow on everything. And this was all pre-Durant. Like, this was back when he wasn't there. And we still wrapped the whole thing up.
And up 3-1 up 3-1 to Cleveland. You win that game by 11 points, 108-97 at Cleveland to go up 3-1. You're coming home, and even though Draymond might be suspended, I remember thinking that game five.
Fine.
Doesn't matter. So maybe you don't win game five at home, although I still thought they were going to win. You're going to go to Cleveland and win game six, and then you go to Cleveland and you lose that one as well. That's when it was like, uh-oh. And you mentioned the LeBron.
But even then, you remember how arrogant we are? Well, hey, at least they'll win the title on their home court. They haven't done that. Right. They didn't do that last year.
And it's 89-89 with a minute to go, and Iguodala gets the bounce pass, and he goes up, and LeBron with a chase down block. And that was a time where I had that sick feeling in my stomach. And you talk about you walking around. You saw me this year with the Belgium-France soccer game at the World Cup, which was the largest wager in my gambling history, and you saw how I acted.
Yeah, basically, we were all uncomfortable. Everyone in the airport bar was uncomfortable during that.
Basically screaming at the TV and flying obscenities, and I'm not saying I'm a very good fan when it comes to watching on TV, and that's how I was watching.
You're a great fan. You were a great fan.
I got problems.
It's just we were all uncomfortable. None of us wanted to listen to that. It was like 10:30 in the morning.
It's like a guy with Tourette's, you know? Just basically just screaming curse words at the TV at the top of his lungs.
The octaves that your voice can reach as you scream at this soccer match that's taking place in front of us. That was the most remarkable part to me. And I cannot believe this guy can get his voice that high.
And that's how I was acting game seven of that NBA Finals in 2016 when inexplicably they just couldn't get a hoop. 13 points in the fourth quarter for the Warriors. And I still have a hard time believing that they even lost that game years later.
Coming in the next day to work was the worst, too. Sitting there doing updates, it's like, oh, gosh, here we go again. I have to say this. And we always have to talk about it and keep talking about it, what went wrong. That one just hurt coming in.
See, the only saving grace to that was thinking about the job where it was like, man, we're going to rate hell tomorrow. It's going to be such an easy show because it's one of those shows that takes no prep. A show like that, whether it's win or lose, you know you're coming in. It's just pure emotion. You don't need notes. You don't need your computer open. You don't need any of that. You're just diving right into it, and you're bringing the calls in, and you're just reacting. It's very fresh. It's very raw. It's very real. I mean, I remember we were on location for the win the first year. We were all the way out in God knows where doing the 20 for 20.
Right.
So we were celebrating taking calls in a diner somewhere just in the middle of nowhere. And then we came back the next year and then coming on for the loss. I mean, knowing you're going to eat crow, but everyone fighting with everyone, just everyone needed to assign blame. Lowe had to be at fault for it. I had to at least spend 30 minutes on that show blaming him for the loss.
I'll never forget what I said on the show I was doing at the time, which I was doing the midday show with Greg Papa. I remember coming on right at 12 o'clock and saying, well, you know, the Cavaliers have won the NBA championship, and I'm joined by Greg Papa. And right when I said that, Greg Papa did 28 straight minutes about how, you know, 3 points of contact, the teabagging. It was Kiki Vandeweghe's fault. We went all the way through it. It was a show that I'll never forget.
This is probably...
I was brilliant that day.
You guys, no, you were, in all seriousness, that was great radio that day. It was fantastic. You, both of you, because you were there. You're only going to get so many reps in that spot.
Sure.
You're only going to get so many shots. You made the most of your shots that day. That would be a great case for why fans can say we. I don't want to go too deep down that rabbit hole, but coming off that loss, we all felt awful. Everyone shouldered that loss. That wasn't just on the players.
Right.
It wasn't just on Draymond and the organization. I remember coming in thinking, man, all around the country, Cleveland, the world, they're laughing at us. And I was thinking, us, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about these guys. We live this stuff. And just to think that people are out there taking pleasure in that, that's part of the beauty of sports. That's why you look back on it now fondly, and why I'm sure Cleveland fans can look back, and even though they lost three of the four, they can take some pleasure in the fact that, you know, you were massive underdogs in at least two of those series. And you did win one. In the pre-Durant era, you went 1-1. That does mean a lot.
And you came back from 3-1 down, which had never been done in the NBA Finals. The fact that, and I think tonight, as we talk about tonight's matchup for just a brief moment, there is going to be some of that 3-1 chatter. You're going to see some Cleveland fans with 3-1 shirts reminding the Warriors.
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, you should. It's tough to really puff out your chest when you're 5-19, but you can always look back at that 3-1 deficit you overcame and be proud of that as a Cavaliers fan.
Well, 3-1 has a new meaning now for the Warriors, so since they won 3 out of the 4. No, so 3-1
sure.
Yeah, that'll play. Mm-hmm. That's what the T-shirt could say. Yeah, not bad. I didn't even think of it like that. John on the Bay Bridge. John, thank you for the phone call. What's going on?
Hey, good morning. Hey, yeah, I got two of my favorite ones. One, I don't know if anybody remembers, but when LeBron got, I think Bogut might have pushed him into the cameraman under the basketball court and split his head open and they put glue on it. That was one of my favorite times. Sorry, Lo, if you're listening. The other one was with the Draymond beef against Tristan Thompson and David West was all in that dude's face, man. That was good. That's good basketball. I love it.
Yeah, that's a great call, John. Thank you. And as Draymond told you at the parade, they're not cut from the same cloth, he and Tristan Thompson. So I think all of the
that parade was a good time.
Yeah.
That's a moment that stands out, too.
Yeah, and I think
I was firing down beers like they were going, like we were out of beers.
You were quietly like the MVP of the parade. Put Jordan Bell and Nick Young aside. You came through for the team in a big way that day. That's all that's going to be said on that subject.
If I could have carried more beer, I would have brought more beer. Let's put it like that. Bonte and I, we filled the arms, and that was pretty much everything.
It was a clutch performance. That was big time.
Beautiful stuff. We're going to bump Steve Mariucci back about 10 minutes, 8:40, because we want to keep the calls coming. Thank you, Cody, for the update on that. If you want to jump in, 888, who was that? Was that Cody or was that a Cody?
You can never tell.
888-957-9570. Hit us up with your favorite moments. 30 games between the Cavs and the Warriors over the last 4 years. Anthony Slater with a tremendous piece on The Athletic, looking back at some of the great moments. But this isn't just about the great moments, the personal moments, the agonizing moments. Being down 2-1 that first season, knowing that if the Warriors lost that series, they may never get back. They may never get back. We didn't view Steph and Klay and Draymond back then the way we do now. It wasn't seen as this juggernaut. It was seen as a great season that could have been a flash in the pan. A lot of people were not willing to buy into the notion of this three-point shooting team with a star in Steph Curry who's very quiet, smaller, perceived by some to be a bit frail,
right,
to be able to carry the load multiple years. A lot of people weren't willing to buy into that.
No, and then to have them look like they were going to be champions the next year, to start 24-0 and to go 73-9, it felt like it was just going to be an afterthought in that postseason. And yet Oklahoma City had you on the ropes. You were about to be knocked out in the conference finals, and yet they found a way to get over that. And then we all thought, okay, now it's a fait accompli. They're going to win the NBA championship for a second straight time, but it didn't go that way for all the different things that took place in what was a pretty dramatic postseason run.
The true mark of the gravity of a situation, like a game 7 or like a game 4 that first year like we're talking about, is if you find yourself out in public, but not necessarily at like a Warrior watch party. You find yourself at a bar where the Warriors game is on. You find yourself at a party where the Warriors game is on, but people are there for a variety of reasons. And you see how many people gravitate to the TV. Like, we've all been to parties like that. We've all been to weddings like that, I'm sure. There's always the jabroni who gets married on a great college football Saturday. Bama LSU are playing or some other matchups taking place. And all the dudes are trying to slide their way out to the bar to see what's going on the game. And no one's on the dance floor. And it's just girls mingling everywhere because their husbands and boyfriends have left them for these games. We've all seen that. I remember, I think it was, and Tony Caffarelli, who works here, I think it was like his brother had some event that was taking place. I want to say it was either game 4 or game 5 that first year. It was over on Treasure Island. It was like this cigar tasting event. There were going to be a bunch of cigars, drinks, all this stuff. Lo and I went over for this, and they made sure they weren't going to have TVs for this thing, but because of the seriousness of the situation, there were TVs everywhere, and you just saw people getting their cigars and mingling. And like, I brought Nikki. I didn't see Nikki for like 40 minutes. She was off doing whatever. We were just gathered around the TV, living and breathing every moment of those games. Every moment of those games, knowing that you could be at these events that these people invite you to. You could be at a bar socializing. Doesn't matter. You could be at a party. And I'm sure plenty of people listening right now have found themselves in that situation where it was the Warriors. I mean, you mentioned earlier our former program director having the roast of himself the night of, what was it?
Game five Western Finals,
first
yes.
First year. Oh, the Houston series.
Yes, they were trying to get to the NBA Finals, and there was a big controversy over what hosts who had agreed to go to this roast were going to go instead of going to the game, actually going to the game where they were going to qualify for the finals. But as the Roastmaster General, I was already locked in. And I had just been rehired here at 95.7 The Game. So I didn't have
no shenanigans,
no gravitas either to say, look, Barrett, thanks for the rehire, but I'm out. I'm going to Oracle to watch this Western Finals. So it's funny you mentioned that event on Treasure Island, because I can think of at least 10 of these NBA Finals games where someone's having a party. It's become must, not only must watch, but must celebrate TV. And it's going to be sad this year, even if the Warriors make it to the NBA Finals, no matter who they play, I don't think it's going to have that same kind of special feel that the last 4 years have had.
Agreed. But there will be something in the newness of it. Whether it's Toronto
That's
or
true.
Boston, I think it's going to be something that re-energizes the fan base. We have, and we've all admitted this, we have gotten spoiled. Going into last year's finals, none of us gave Cleveland any respect whatsoever. I'll be the first to admit that. I showed up for those first two games at Oracle, waltzed in, laughing, grab a beer, whatever. Just no respect
Game
for them
one
at all.
Didn't even sell out, if I'm not mistaken, right?
They claim later that there was a credit card issue, and then there were the late release of the holds, and that was kind of part of the problem. I don't know what the technical aspects of it
right.
were, but yeah, it didn't appear to be a sellout. And it was like, there wasn't a whole lot of interest. We knew the ratings were going to be down because it was just, you know, it's the same old story, but it's not Cleveland with Kyrie. They're going to get crushed. And they put on a hell of a show, hat tip to Cleveland for that. But this year, you're right, there will be some of the emotion gone, some of the fondness, I'm not sure what I'm looking for, but just that what's tied to the past, that's all going to be gone. The nostalgia of it
yeah.
will be gone, and it's going to be on to the new era. And I think that's at least going to energize everyone, because you're going to go in with a whole new set of storylines. It's not about can Iguodala match up with LeBron, who's going to guard Kyrie, how's it going to work this way and that way. It's now going to be about, you know, if it's Kyrie or Kawhi Leonard, excuse me, you know, after what we already saw, there's going to be a whole new set of storylines, which is going to be nice.
Yeah, Pascal Siakam going up against Kevon Looney. You know, the
whole
matchup. That
new series of names we need to learn, too.
Exactly. Siakam and Ibaka. If it is Toronto and you've got Siakam and Ibaka, your boy Lo Neal is going to have a field day with those names. I can't
Any
wait.
Any locations to visit.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Storylines there.
Dan in San Francisco. Thank you for the phone call, Dan. What's going on?
Oh, good morning. I have two moments. One is, prior to the 4 years, Draymond's rookie season introduction to LeBron, go to Cleveland, get the game-winning basket, how do you like me now? It kind of was a precursor to what we could see coming. And last year, game one, I call it the gift, because my son gave me and him went to the game for Father's Day, a week before Father's Day. And LeBron had his best game ever as a pro, seriously, 51-point dominance. But the gift was from JR. He gifted us the game, and we got overtime, and then LeBron went out and broke his hand afterwards, and I was there to see the whole thing, and it was really my most memorable moment. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. LeBron was awesome in that game.
I'd forgotten about the broken hand, too.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, he punched the
whiteboard, wouldn't say anything, and then as soon as he checked out of game four, he had his hand wrapped, and then I
wrapped my hand at the parade in mock jest.
Oh my God,
of LeBron.
I forgot about that. You did do that.
Because after the series is over, he comes out to the podium, he's got his hand all wrapped up, and now it can be told, I sustained a broken hand.
No. You're missing the key part to the whole thing. He sat down, and he was wearing
long sleeves,
and he's answering questions, and like, no one had asked anything, but there was silence, because no one knew who was going to ask the question, and he kind of like waved the hand a little bit as he was talking, and then he was like, oh, this? Is this what you're all looking at? Yeah, okay, so I'll explain this. It's like, no one actually asked you, or no one actually noticed, but yeah, why are you wearing a cast? Oh, so it is broken. Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that. But that was...
After the J.R. Smith wrong way maneuver, the broken
hand. I would
have
done that. I mean, is that not justified? 51 points, he had a huge game. And if one thing that people forget about that game, because I remember sitting there, again, ton of bragging about the team going into the finals, no assumption whatsoever that Cleveland could even be close to a worthy adversary. That was not only a close game that Cleveland was winning. Klay got hurt. Do you remember when Klay went down in that game?
That's
that looked
right.
like he wrecked his either knee or ankle. I can't remember. Was
oh,
it
that's right.
And he came. It was so bad on the replay. I kept thinking to myself, if he's done, if he's wrecked his leg and he's out for the series, this is now a series. Somehow, some way, James is going to make this a series. Even though you still have Draymond, Durant, Steph, you know the importance of Clay. Now, I think he checked back in and he was battling like a high ankle sprain the rest of the way. And, you know, he performed admirably given the injury, but that was a bad look. Game one, they weren't performing well. Cleveland looked fantastic in that game. James is going off and Clay got hurt. That actually really started to add some intrigue. And then J.R. Smith went for Henny.
Yeah, and then LeBron breaks his hand and the Warriors break out the brooms and they do the sweep. And next thing you know, God. Anna's wearing high heels at a parade.
Right. Not a-
I had to get that in, Anna. That's
sure. Of course you did.
That's one of my top 10 memories.
I came back from the beer and you guys are like, you're not going to believe this. Anna's got heels on and we're at a parade. She's going to be walking today.
It was like, short heels. Short heels. They were not high heels. A lot shorter than ones I normally wear.
John and Hercules. John, thank you for the phone call. What's going on?
What's good? Good morning, y'all.
Good morning to you. Thanks for the call.
Of course, yeah. A lot of good memories in this rivalry, but I got a little bit of a recency bias. But I want to talk about Game 3 of the 2018 Finals. I was actually watching with my girl back in our hotel room in Hawaii. We were down all game. Steph and Clay were really struggling, but I still just had a good feeling about the game. You know, we hung around. KD carried us down the stretch. Steph hit a couple big shots, and then, of course, KD versus Bron at the logo. LeBron switches off him. KD pulls up from the same spot in the left wing for the dagger. I could feel the agony in the hearts of Cleveland all the way from Hawaii, and I loved it. That moment was huge because it ended this historic rivalry, broke the Cavs, and ended the LeBron era in Cleveland.
Great nice uptick. Really, really
Hercules
brought that home
coming
there.
Strong.
Really brought that home there. Shout out Hercules. We love you. We know you guys are listening.
Former
so
contender in the Bay Star rankings, which are set to make a return after football.
We'll bring him back in the summertime when we're really
dying for content.
Let's be honest, when we're really coming in here every morning, like, what do you got? And everyone's just looking at each other with empty holsters.
Our Giants Brewers retrospective show coming up in 5 months. But first,
Leroy in Oakland. Leroy, from what I'm being told, Leroy is the individual who came up with the grilled cheesed forehead moniker for Lo Neal. Leroy, is this true?
That is true. Good morning, guys. Good morning, Anna. That is true.
You are welcome on this program anytime, and I apologize for the guys in the back not putting you to the front of the line immediately. That is arguably the greatest thing that was ever said on this radio show.
He has GOAT status now here on Jolo and Dibs. That's incredible.
You do, Leroy. The floor is yours. You can talk about whatever you want.
Hey, thank you, guys. Hey, listen, I just wanted to say my favorite moment was June 2015 with the Warriors, and it is when Steve Kerr introduced his small ball lineup by placing Andre Iguodala in the starting lineup for Andrew Bogut. I mean, Iguodala scored 22 points that game. He grabbed like 8 rebounds. And the more important thing is he held LeBron James to 7-4, 22 shooting. And we won that game 103-82. And, you know, Iguodala, you know, he stayed in the starting lineup the whole rest of the way, and he ended up getting the finals MVP. So that was my favorite moment.
Great stuff, Leroy. My favorite moment ever working on this show is when you said Lowe's forehead looked like grilled cheese. That will last forever.
I'm not sure if I've ever seen you laugh that hard in all of my brief time knowing you.
I got
years.
An hour out of it. We did an hour of material on that comment through the rest of that show. I was losing my mind. He's worn a hat every day since.
Yes, for good reason. To cover up that grilled cheese on wheat that is so prominent.
We can't. Okay, he's not here. He's not feeling well. We can't bust him up too much today. We'll save that for tomorrow.
Shut up, guys.
You mentioned that as your favorite moment, too.
Yes.
The death lineup. The move to Iguodala to counter what Cleveland was doing. What's the true story behind that? It wasn't Kerr. Kerr made the final decision, but wasn't it a video assistant?
I believe it was Daniel Uren.
That's who it was, who had been studying the tape and went to Kerr with the idea that led to the death lineup, which led to the series-altering shift in how that played out.
That's right. And the thing that stuck with me then, and you're reminding me of it now, is just how impressed I was at Steve Kerr at the ability to have his assistants be empowered enough to be able to come to him and say, look, coach, this is, I know I'm just a video coordinator. I'm not a first row coach. I'm a second row coach. But here's what I see. For Steve to be open enough to take the advice and then apply it, it shows you just how secure and confident Steve Kerr was as a coach then. And you see it now in the way he continues to lead.
What a tactical move. It changed everything. That was I just, every little chess piece was dissected for 4 hours every morning during that series.
And you know, in pro sports, all we talk about is these giant egos, yet the head coach had enough humility and enough presence of mind to take this advice from an unheralded youngster and apply it, and it turns out it works. And that's empowering for an organization for years to come.
Absolutely. Today's Take Your Pick poll question brought to you by FH Daily Chevrolet, which is up on the website, 957thegame.com. Will the Warriors win by 12 or more points in Cleveland Wednesday night? That number is there by design. I didn't just randomly pick 12. I think you all know what I'm thinking about. All right, to the phones we go. We will take more calls on this in a little while. Former head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. You can check him out now as a tremendous analyst for the NFL Network. 95.7 The Game contributor Steve Mariucci with us here on 95.7 The Game. How are you, coach?
Hey, Dibs. Hi, Joe. Hey, Lorenzo's not with you anymore, huh? Right today, he's sick of you guys.
That's a fair assessment, coach.
We did know that was coming at some point. The fact that he lasted this long is truly a testament to his patience, coach.
Well, maybe he'll be back. Maybe he'll reconsider, huh?
We hope so. We hope so indeed. Big fella scheduled to join us tomorrow. Tell me what it's like when the calendar flips to December. Here we are. The NFL's coming down the stretch for its final few weeks. Some teams, like our local teams, have been eliminated. Some teams are trying to gain one seeds, two seeds, wild card bursts. As a head coach of a team in the playoff hunt, what is it like when the calendar flips to December?
Yeah, you know, most coaches will divide the season up into quartiles. And so here it is. This is the last one, the fourth quarter. And these four games now, after Thanksgiving, in fact, we've heard Bill Belichick say many times, the season really doesn't start till after Thanksgiving. And so whatever you do, you position yourself to make a playoff run. And that means see how healthy you can possibly be. You peak at the right time. You know, the young players that you've been developing over time need now to be real pros, not rookies anymore. And so everything, there's a culmination of all the work you've done. Let's see if we can peak in December and hopefully in January.
When you're on the other side of the coin and you're entering that last quartile and you're a 49er team that's 2-10, what sort of things are you looking for? Not only from some of the younger players you're looking to get a look at, but some of the veterans as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You're evaluating your team from top to bottom. And you're trying to determine where you go in the off season with what your needs might be in terms of free agency. How much money do we have cap room to spend on free agency because of our needs? Who do we need to draft? What positions we need to draft? It's starting to sort out as to how early you're going to draft in each round. But the other thing is the scouting department also is going to be looking at other teams' free agents to see if they are a fit for your team come free agency. So, you know, it's an evaluation process. The teams that, you know, there's going to be about a 40% turnover on most teams anyway on their roster. There are a lot of changeover in NFL teams. And teams that have two wins, like our local teams, will have a lot of changes. It's just how it is.
Coach Steve Mariucci with us here on 95.7 The Game. If you're John Gruden or if you're Kyle Shanahan, you're trying to make the most of a difficult situation here down the stretch. How much of the next few games are about experimentation? If you find yourself in a situation where you're eliminated from the playoffs, what's your game plan look like? Is it similar or are you trying new things in preparation for next year?
Well, they're trying to win, okay? Anybody that thinks that they're trying to tank it so they can draft first and all that is hogwash, I believe. I think these coaches and players are trying to prepare to win the next game, and they have a single purpose, and that's what it is right now. You know, maybe fans, some people say, well, if we draft first, these guys are available, blah, blah, blah. But I think they want to win games. Now, if that means taking a look at a kid that hasn't played a whole lot, so be it. That might be the case. I don't know if you're going to experiment and try new offenses or new defenses. That's not going to be it. It's going to be allowing somebody to play and get more reps because he hasn't been able to show much of what he's done. Maybe some of that. But the first and foremost goal is to win the game. And these two teams have tough schedules. We know that. The last four games, you know, for the Niners with Denver, who's a hot team right now, having beaten the Steelers and the Chargers, and recently the Bengals and the Seahawks are better than expected, and the Bears are better than expected, and, of course, the Rams are the Rams. And then the Raiders have a tough schedule, too, with the Steelers come in town. So they're going to try to finish out the best way they can and then evaluate the heck out of their roster and then make tough decisions in the offseason to improve their team.
What sort of commitment do you owe the other teams in the league as far as playing spoiler? Because the Niners are in a situation 2-10. You mentioned Denver, a team that is still trying to cling to a playoff hope. Do the Niners owe it to the other teams and to the league to do all they can to try to win, or can they be a little bit more loose and liberal with things like maybe going forward on fourth down, or like you say, playing a lot more of the younger players?
Yeah, I don't know if they owe it to the league or to any other team. I think they owe it to themselves to compete, play hard, try to win the game, and whoever that benefits, that's fine, and whoever that eliminates, that's fine too. I think they stay focused on themselves. Let's try to find a way to beat the Denver Broncos. It's that simple. And whatever ramifications that might have, great. I don't think we're going to tank this game to help you out and go to the playoffs because I like you. That doesn't happen. Mm-mm.
Coach D. Mariucci with us here on 95.7 The Game. Given the state of the NFL these days, it's very difficult to play defense. Any sort of contact is likely to result in a flag. If you were to rank the importance of NFL positions, all of them, what would be the top 3 to 5? I'm sure quarterback is probably still number one, but how would you see it after that in terms of valuable, most valuable positions in the NFL?
Well, yeah, the obvious one is quarterback, and then the backup quarterback is probably up there pretty high as well. But the long snapper is very important. We never talk about that, but if you don't have a long snapper, you can't win. You know, we look at offenses and how they're built. And, you know, Michael Irvin on our air talked about the triplets that they had in Dallas. You know, it's nice to have that great quarterback, and it's nice to, surround him with a supporting cast that has a great number one receiver and a tailback, too. And so start with that. But you got teams like Kansas City Chiefs who add a tight end to that mix. It's not triplets. It's quadruplets. But with that said, you better have at least one great offensive tackle, sometimes two, that's required. Most people will look at it like if this is a passing league, we better have pass rushers, and that certainly is very important to put pressure on quarterbacks like the Rams did. You know, they had Aaron Donald, maybe the best defensive player in the league, but then they went out and got Ndamukong Suh and a couple of top corners and you name it. This is a league that it's so wide open. We use the whole field. You better have guys that can run and tackle in space. And so we don't see the big 250-pound linebacker anymore. We see athletes, smaller linebackers that can really run. They're like safeties. And because they have to cover grass and they have to, you know, they go out and cover running backs and out in the, like wide receivers. So to answer your question, quarterbacks, yeah, you got to have playmakers on offense. Hopefully it's a receiver and a running back. You have to have pass protectors and tackles, and you have to have pass rushers. And then did I mention corners? You better have a bunch of them on your team, maybe 5 or 6. That can cover the empty sets.
Steve Mariucci here on 95.7 The Game. The 49ers have spent first-round draft capital on defensive linemen 3 times in the recent years. Does this preclude them from trying to fill that need this year? Even though they desperately need a pass rusher, can they risk it and go out there and spend another first-round pick on a pass rusher?
Yeah, they could. It's possible because you have to have that guy. You know, look in the division. You got quarterbacks that they're playing against that are terrific. They got to chase around Russell Wilson and Jared Goff, and Josh Rosen's going to be a good player in due time. So you got to have guys that can sack the quarterback. You got to have corners that can cover. You know, you'd like to have a shutdown corner if possible, so you don't have to play more zone. But they'll do a good job. They've already been, you know, studying the talent coming out in this draft. They have a pretty good idea who the top 5 or 10 players are already, I'm sure. And so we'll see what happens. But if they feel they need another pass rusher, a guy that gets home, you know, maybe more often than the guys that they have, they'll go ahead and do that.
Coach, this is that time of year when teams that are in trouble, like Green Bay, for example, are starting to look for new head coach candidates. Everyone wants the next Sean McVay. What we were discussing the other day was the idea of defensive coaches being promoted to head coaches. It feels like if your head coach is a defensive-minded guy, he's going to need a great play caller as his offensive coordinator. much like what we saw with Dan Quinn and Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. But here's the problem.
Right.
If the play caller is extraordinarily talented, he's immediately going to find himself as a candidate for a head coaching job. So do you, how difficult is it going to be for defensive coordinators to land head coaching jobs, knowing the league is skewing so much more towards offense than ever before?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good thought, too, because I think if you're a defensive-minded coach and you land a job, not only do you have to have an offensive coordinator or two in mind that will come with you, you also have to have a quarterback coach that is next in line in case that guy leaves. So a very capable guy, you know, like a Freddie Kitchens, you know, a guy that's coaching quarterbacks, John DeFilippo, who, you know, you coach quarterbacks for a while and you learn to be a coordinator in case that coordinator leaves because he's successful and takes a head job, boom, you got a guy that can step right in without changing the offense. So that defensive-minded potential head coach has got to have that in mind. He's got to have a coordinator in the system and another quarterback coach that can come with him and learn it.
And as you're looking at the replacement for Mike McCarthy in Green Bay, what sort of a quarterback coach or offensive coordinator or head coach figure does Aaron Rodgers need at this point in his career? Does he need a young entrepreneurial wizard type or somebody a little bit older with some more gravitas to help him relearn about leadership?
I'm not sure what you mean about learn about leadership, but
same here. The whole entrepreneurial thing threw me through a loop too.
You know, I don't know which way they're going to go, but don't discount Joe Philbin. You know, he's been there before with Aaron Rodgers, right? And they've had success together. And then he left and he became a head coach. So he's got that experience already also. So if they find that the chemistry with Joe Philbin, the play calling, this fourth quartile finish with the Packers is satisfactory, don't be surprised that they just keep Joe Philbin. He's not a young whippersnapper coach, you know, out of college that runs this fancy spread stuff. You know, he's a guy that's familiar with the Packer way and Aaron Rodgers. And so I think he's the front runner, to be quite honest with you, because he's in the driver's seat right now. And if he finishes strong, he'll have a heck of a shot. He's got the resume, right?
Absolutely.
That, we'll have to wait and see what they do. The Packer organization is awesome. I coached there, you know, for 4 years. I grew up a Packer fan all the way up. I had Packer stuff on my diapers, okay? And so very, very unique organization that doesn't have a single owner. There's a board. Of course, Mark Murphy is the president and GM, and they have structure, but it's a board that helps make decisions on finances and everything else. But it's going to be a huge decision because think about it. Because when I went there with Mike Holmgren after he left the Niners, they had a drought now. They had a two-decade drought where they weren't going to the playoffs. They weren't winning. It was tough after Lombardi left. And so Mike got it back. How did they do that? Well, with a guy named Favre and then Aaron Rodgers. So for another two decades, they've been blessed with what the Niners had in Montana and Steve Young. So the Packer organization, you know, whoever the coach might be, you know, he'll ride these last few years with Aaron Rodgers. But then after that, man, you better find that quarterback because they expect to win. That Mike McCarthy had two losing seasons in 12, okay? And he got let go in the middle of the year. That's what the expectations there are. That's amazing. 125 wins and nine playoff appearances, and he gets let go in the middle of the year. So pressure on this next coach, whoever it might be. But it's a heck of an organization. And as long as they have Aaron Rodgers, they'll have a chance to be very good.
Former head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. You can check him out now. He's a tremendous analyst for the NFL Network. 95.7 The Game contributor Steve Mariucci with us here on 95.7 The Game. Coach, we always appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much.
All right. Tell Lo I said hello and get better and get back to work, huh?
We'll be sure to, Coach. We will relay that to him right now.
I'll talk to you next time.
All right. See ya. Biggest takeaway from that is that when you're in search of any sort of leadership, coach, program director at a radio station, I want them to be entrepreneurial.
Absolutely.
That was a great question. Nothing I want more in my head coach than the ability to create a small business
while also running my football team.
Maybe not the exact word I was looking for, but the idea of Lincoln Riley, somebody who is ahead of the game, ahead of the curve when it comes to offensive designing for football. And you look at Aaron Rodgers, and it didn't work out with Mike McCarthy, so what kind of coach can you bring in to get Aaron Rodgers to raise the level of his game?
Also, Mariucci kept referring to how he broke down the season in quartiles. Is that a word? Did he mean quarters?
No.
And he just said quartiles?
It's a word.
Help me out with that. Why would he break it down into quartiles rather than quarters?
Because that's a word that he probably feels more comfortable with. Quartile. I believe a quartile is essentially the same as a quarter, but I think a quartile may refer to graphing.
So each of four equal groups into which a population can be divided according to the distribution values of a particular variable.
Yeah, so quarters, quartile, eventually the same thing. Because he says that, and it's like, well, if you have a bad fourth quartile, you could claim quartile dysfunction.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Someone get Guru in here with those blue chews. On this Warrior Wednesday, brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. As always, hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. I see some of you are still on hold. Your calls will be coming up next. Greatest moments in the Warrior-Cavalier rivalry, that four-year stretch. Anything you want to talk about during that stretch is on the table as we get set for tonight's game in Cleveland, 4 p.m. right here on 95.7 The Game. Joe Lowe and Dibs right here, back in a flash on 95.7 The Game.